News of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program Today's Issues here on AFR, American Family Radio. Thanks for listening. Joining me in studio today to co-host is Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Fred Jackson.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Ray Pritchard.
Good morning, Tim.
And we thank you all for listening to AFR. So much to talk about, so much happening in our country. We're going to be discussing a lot of topics today. But first of all, we've all been paying attention to the hurricane that came ashore overnight in South Louisiana, and then I guess also hit parts of Texas. And, of course, 8 days of hope is a ministry that, was started because of Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath of that, and Steve Tiber and his dad's desire to go to the Gulf Coast and help those who were suffering. And they've since blossomed as a national ministry doing work all over the country, and they even have a rapid response team. And American Family Radio is honored to partner with 8 Days of Hope on their ministry. And Steve joins us now. Steve, good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Are you in Buffalo today or Cedar Rapids, or where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. They had a derecho a couple weeks ago. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but a hurricane-like winds up here in Iowa. We've been here for 2 weeks, another week left. So we'll have a team that will stay here. But, of course, last night, pretty much up all night talking to church leaders in Louisiana, and seeing some of the pictures and videos this morning, it's been humbling. So we're on our way, though, brother. We're on our way.
Yeah, I wanted you to tell folks, Steve, what I know it's early, but what are the plans for South Louisiana?
You know, we had an original plan, but so many times you do disaster relief, you end up on plan C, D, or E. We had a church picked out in Lake Charles, church called Church of the King, and unfortunately, that church and almost every other church in the area has had catastrophic damage, and so they won't be able to house us. So as of this minute, it looks like we'll be securing a church outside Lake Charles. We'll work in that area and work our way into Lake Charles over the upcoming weeks. So we're going to be announcing all that information on our website, 8daysofhope.com. If you don't get our email alerts now, just go there today and ask to get them, and we'll let you know. But we think in the next 24 hours, we'll announce, you know, we might start in Jennings or DeRider and then work our way to Lake Charles. But what we've seen so far, this is going to be a 4 to 6, maybe even 8 week deployment. So the need is huge.
So who are you looking for to volunteer?
Yeah, so you know, with rapid response, this is an active disaster site, so you have to be 18. You don't have to be skilled. We're going to be tarping roofs and salvaging items and mucking out homes that flooded, debris cleanup. It's free. We provide the food and lodging. You can come for 3 days, 5 days, or all 35 days, or however long we're there. And again, you can volunteer right on our website at 8daysofhope.com. And again, that should be opened up by tomorrow morning. And again, we think we'll be there for the next 6 to 8 weeks. It's going to be a long journey. Mm.
So everything's going to be posted at the website, 8daysofhope.com?
Absolutely. So our equipment will be en route tomorrow morning, and our feeding team and our shower trailers and our heavy equipment, it's all ready to go. We've been working the last 2 days in Tupelo, Mississippi at our national headquarters. And so again, if people go to our website, they can volunteer as quick as tomorrow. And boy, this is the time to pray. This is a great time for the church to take the lead. I love our country, but no country, you know, no party, no leader can just wave a wand and fix everything. So this is a great time for you and I to join together and serve those in need. So again, all that, you can learn more about the ministry on our Facebook page as well, but we've got a doozy ahead of us. This is the strongest hurricane to ever hit Louisiana.
Mm. That's saying a lot. You know, think about it.
Hey, Steve, this is Walker. One quick question about Cedar Rapids. I know y'all been there a couple weeks now. What's the latest on Cedar Rapids?
Yeah, so every home in the four quads of Cedar Rapids had some type of damage. I mean, every home, a tree, shingles, Their fence is gone. We've been here for 2 weeks. We have I think 5 lifts to do the trees that are hanging on houses. We're going to finish strong here. We were only going to come for 2 weeks, but when we came here, we saw the need was huge, so we extended a third week. So today, I think there's volunteers serving 7 or 8 different families. We brought our laundry trailer up here. The power's still out. There's an area of the city where a large group of refugees live, and the power is out. So we took our laundry trailer, and we have, you know, 10 washers and dryers, and we're just giving people the decency, the dignity of having clean clothes. So you can volunteer there as well. We're here till Saturday the 5th, and that information is on our website as we speak as well.
Thanks, Steve. God bless you, brother.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate your support. AFR, you've always been kind to us. 80% of our volunteers heard about 8 Days of Hope on American Family Radio. So Tim Walker team, love you guys. Thank you so much.
Amen.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve. Pray for Steve and his team at 8 Days of Hope. And I know many, many people listening to us right now, Walker, have volunteered over the years, as Steve said, AFR listeners, for 8 Days of Hope projects.
Yeah, the way 8 Days of Hope does it is amazing. And people of all backgrounds and all different skill sets can go and volunteer. And 8 Days of Hope, once you sign up and show up, they take care of you. They feed you. They provide some form of lodging for most people who come. And they'll put you on a job and provide all the tools and everything you need. So it's a great way to witness and to help others.
Amen. Fred, go ahead.
Yeah, just a little bit more, kind of an update on where Laura is at this hour. Just to prove how strong it is, it remained a Category 2 as it hit Shreveport, much inland, this morning. Now it's down to a Cat 1. But the governor of Arkansas now issuing a warning that it will still be a strong wind and rain event when it hits Arkansas just a little bit later today. It's, to hear a tropical storm warning in Arkansas is very unusual, but that just speaks to the strength of this. Been watching some of the videos coming out of Lake Charles. I mean, it's stated every time, but it looks like a war zone in some of the communities there. So far, authorities are confirming only one death. A young lady died when a tree fell on her house. But as we were reporting yesterday, despite warnings, a lot of folks said they were going to stay in their homes there on the coast, and it hit as a Category 4, 150-mile-an-hour winds. So there will likely be more. Just listening to an interview that Fox did with Senator Kennedy of Louisiana, one of the senators from Louisiana, and he says this is one of the worst that he has seen. If there's any good news at all, so far, Hurricane Laura did not deliver the rain and water damage that they were worried about, but it was a heavy, heavy-duty wind event when it hit the shoreline. And we won't know for sure until FEMA crews and others get in there and reveal a little bit more later today. But this thing is still strong, headed towards Arkansas now. We'll also get parts of western Mississippi a little bit later as the day goes on and tomorrow.
Well, that's really all happened in about 5 days, didn't it? Five or six days.
Mm-hmm.
That we begin to hear reports, Ray, out of, the weather. At this time of year, you have those, what do you call them, tropical waves that come off the coast of Africa?
Yes.
Right. And I noted last night as it was approaching landfall, they were using a word I hadn't heard before. They were talking about unsurvivable storm surge. That's a, the Weather Service doesn't use a word like that unless it is dire and drastic. Unsurvivable storm surge. So as Fred said, the storm has got to pull out of Louisiana, and it's making its way north and then to the east, and then we'll get a better view of what happened. But it's really something, Tim, for them to say this is the strongest hurricane ever to hit Louisiana, because they've been hit a lot over the years.
All right, Fred, a couple of other big news stories, right? The Republican National Convention.
Yes, today is the last day of the Republican National Convention. Of course, the big event tonight will be the speech from President Trump. To wrap things up, he's going to be speaking from the South Lawn of the White House last night. Of course, another speakers have been incredible. As we noted yesterday, even the Democrats have been saying the production of this convention far exceeded anything the Democrats came up with. One of the featured speakers last night, and we'll get certainly to the vice president's speech in just a second. One of the featured speakers last night was South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. And to say that she's a rising star in the Republican Party is an understatement. And she is articulate. She is not afraid to say what's on her mind. And last night, she talked quite a bit about what has been happening in this country. And I tell you what, it was very interesting the way the media was handling, because last night what we had was the media, MSNBC, they didn't like what Kristi Noem was saying. They cut into her speech because she was attacking Democrat-run cities that are running amok with these mobs right now. And so what MSNBC did, they cut in. Rachel Maddow said, we're going to interrupt the speech because we need to fact check the governor of South Dakota right now. And then they brought in the mayor of Seattle, who painted this rosy picture of Seattle. It's everything is wonderful there. But then Brian Kilmeade this morning on Fox and Friends set the record straight of what really is happening in Seattle. So here you go. You're going to hear first from Kristi Noem and then Rachel Maddow. Cut to.
Democrat-run cities across this country are being overrun by violent mobs. The violence is rampant. There's looting, chaos, destruction, and murder. People that can afford to flee have fled.
We're just going to interject here just for a moment. That was South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. We will interject when we feel like there's something that's important and deliberate and very wrong that should be corrected, just so that we feel responsible about our broadcast.
Her caricature of the great cities across America is not only wrong, it's purposefully wrong. Seattle is a city that I raised my two children in, and I would not have raised them anywhere else.
Well, right now, they've already hit their murder of total of last year. Over 100 businesses have permanently shut down from that city. Mm-hmm. And they called it, the latest quote was from a Seattle e-bike shop owner who said, I'm out of here. The violence is happening so often. I'm getting out of town. The quote, downtown Seattle is Tombstone, Arizona.
Wow.
So, and this is the way it has gone. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about the other media, CNN and others, the way they're covering this. Last week, Democrat speakers, according to the mainstream media, could say nothing wrong. I mean, everything that emanated
Did they fact check the Democratic National Convention and interrupt?
One, I saw, as far as the Associated Press goes, they did one fact check last week, and that was on Michelle Obama in blaming President Trump solely for the kids being kept in cages.
But I wonder if Maddow interjected herself into the DNC convention.
Well, if I was a betting man, you could bet it never happened.
Well, let me just, about that, Rachel Maddow of MSNBC, you know, with political conventions and with political speeches, a lot of what is said is hyperbole. A lot of what is said is sometimes exaggeration. What I'm saying is you can always find find something to say where you're. Like when Joe Biden, for example, said, I'm tested every day. Isn't that what he said? For cognitive decline?
Right.
Remember what he said?
Uh-huh.
He said, I'm tested every day. Well, Rachel Maddow, at that point, should have broken in that day and said, we fact-checked this, and Joe Biden is not checked. He doesn't mentally test every day. So that's factually wrong. We just want to, for the sake of our broadcast, make that known.
Back to programming.
Back to the program. So, Ray, go ahead.
Well, political speeches, especially convention speeches, as you are saying, everybody expects some degree of hyperbole. I don't understand how they could fact check the governor of South Dakota. She was giving not just a statement. There is unrest in these major cities like Seattle and Portland and Chicago and the others. And then she was offering her opinion. So I don't, it's really a useless exercise. And I will say that if you just listen to the way the CNN announcer set that up, they're just admitting right up front, they're not seeking the truth. They just don't want the Republicans to get their message out. And they're playing games. That's all. Yeah. This isn't news reporting, Tim. This is editorializing.
The mainstream, the liberal mainstream media, they want Joe Biden to be elected president.
Yes.
So you have to shield the American public as much as you can from the violence and turmoil and mayhem that is happening. The statistics don't lie. The murder rate in New York's through the roof.
Yeah.
And compared to past years, recent past years, in other cities, violent crime is way up. So, those are just facts. When you have attacks and defund the police and those kinds of things, you're going to have an increase in crime. That just stands to reason.
Yeah. One part that's shocking, or not shocking, but concerning to me. Is, and this has been going on, this isn't new, but where you have all the big tech giants, all the Facebooks, the Twitters, the YouTubes, all of them, where they're censoring or they're pulling down content that they think is inaccurate, or they're putting notices saying this is false information according to their opinion. Now you have main TV networks interjecting themselves into live programming.
Right.
To then basically cut off the content.
Right.
I mean, this is what China does, except for it's the government. Now we have private institutions or private companies working on behalf of the Democrats.
Listen, if you want to come on after the talk, whoever may be giving the speech, in this case the governor of South Dakota, Rachel Maddow, and you want to just chop her up, you know, and have somebody on that disagrees with what she just said, I'm fine with that. I think everybody is. We know what's going on. It's people have their viewpoints, and they're going to try to discredit the other side, Fred. But this is unprecedented that I'm aware of, where you interrupt a live speech to, quote, fact-check the information that's given by the speakers.
Yeah, it's unprecedented. But, you know, I'm not sure if you guys heard, but MSNBC is about to undergo a name change. It's going to be MSDNC.
that's what President Trump calls them.
Quite now, Rachel Maddow's show, you know, rises and falls. It depends on how much she's able to get people who don't like President Trump to watch. Her show has a big variance, I've noticed over the last couple of years. She's
being badly beaten in the latest ratings. I mean, Fox is just head and shoulders over everybody else.
MSNBC, they're down to, I think there were 16 viewers last night nationwide, so they're suffering. All right, a lot happened at the Republican National Convention last night. Vice President Pence spoke at Fort McHenry.
Yes.
Right?
He was
Fort McHenry is the place where Francis Scott Key saw our flag flying and penned the national anthem.
Yes.
So it was inspired by that. By the way, you used to be able to see Old Glory, the original Old Glory that Francis Scott Key talked about on display at the, I think you still can, I haven't been in a while, at the Museum of American History in Washington, the Smithsonian there. But anyway, that's what the setting was last night.
Yes.
The Vice President spoke.
We'll hear a little bit from his speech here. Is cut number 8.
The violence must stop, whether in Minneapolis, Portland, or Kenosha. Too many heroes have died defending our freedom to see Americans strike each other down. We will have law and order on the streets of this country for every American of every race and creed and color.
Yeah, the vice president is saying there's not a problem with peaceful protests. The problem is with the violence that's occurring in these cities. And it was amazing. I mean, CNN, we were talking about MSNBC a moment ago. CNN had a reporter I believe it was last night, doing what they call a live stand-up from Kenosha. Here's what across the bottom of the screen as this guy was reporting, and he's got buildings on fire behind him, cars burning up in Kenosha, and he said, fiery but mostly peaceful protests here in Kenosha. I mean,
it's like something Saturday Night Live would do.
Exactly. I mean, the disconnect between reality and what they're trying to portray to their audience, CNN, MSNBC, is just unbelievable.
I think they had a 7 p.m. raid curfew last night, Kenosha. So if the CNN reporter's out on the street.
Right. Yeah. What's that all about? It would be funny if it were not so sad, tragic, and actually terrifying to stand with burning buildings in the background. Right.
And they do that. They do that for effect, for the news effect, because they want you to watch. So they get eyeballs by showing things burning. But then for the reporter to say what now, Ray?
It's fiery, but mostly peaceful protests. Fiery.
That's one of those moments that reporters probably thinking to himself, no, I just didn't do that. I just didn't say fiery.
Fiery, but mostly peaceful
protests. In Kenosha.
That's like reporting from Afghanistan as tanks roll by and they're blasting bullets down the street. Everything's calm down here in Afghanistan. Back to you, Don.
You know, I know we've talked about this before, fellas, but this is revealing, again, the divide in our nation.
Yes.
There are people who believe... And I don't know how, Ray, I don't know how you resolve the dilemma that I'm fixing to lay out that everybody's seeing and hearing. Because you have the NBA, some of the teams refused to play yesterday, but they boycotted because of the incident that happened with the guy in Kenosha, Wisconsin. What you have here is people who believe that the police are out to get young black males in particular, right?
Right.
I mean, they're going to use lethal force unnecessarily, willy-nilly, if you will. So you have people who, that's their mindset. And so whatever happens in a situation like with this man in Kenosha, the default position is the police murdered an unarmed black man. Therefore, we must riot to stop this from going on across America. That's the narrative.
Right.
The other side is what, Ray? Go ahead.
Well, the other side of it is that these armed looters have been set loose in major American cities, and they are looting and burning, and the police are being prohibited from stopping them. So that's not just the other side, Tim. That's the truth of what is happening in these cities. They are being let loose to do whatever they want to do.
Yes.
It's lawlessness. It's anarchy.
Absolutely. And, but the other side is people say, which is our position, I think all of us here, is the police let's let a specific incident be judged on its own merits, our own investigation. Like in this situation with this young man, he gets into a fight, basically scuffle, with police officers who are asking him to stop. Right?
Right.
Right.
He has a warrant for his arrest. He has a long rap sheet. And he runs away from the cops trying to get into his car to either get a weapon or to leave the scene. And when you reach into your car...
And he had a knife on him. That was confirmed.
Then when you reach into the car, then the cop has to make a split-second decision. What is he reaching for? And I've told him to stop time and time again.
Yeah.
We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
We got nothing but Italians on this show.
We're changing lives one question at a time. Trivia Friday is educational programming.
What big cat can't roar?
That's pathetic.
The mime cat. I've seen them. They got those white gloves on their paws.
You use milk to sweeten your breath.
In the first century.
What happened when the milk soured?
You got trouble.
Yeah, right that's there. A good.
See, you don't get a second date. I'll just tell you that right now.
Trivia Friday, 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. In March, we're going on our annual trip to the Holy Land. And if you want to go with us, get the brochure or visit the website, twholyland.com. twholyland.com. We're going to go to Israel. We're going to go to Jerusalem. So much to see there. Bethlehem, the Dead Sea. We're going to the Jordan River where we'll have a baptismal service. We're going to ride a boat on the Sea of Galilee. We're going to so many places you've read about your whole life in the Bible. It's going to be the trip of a lifetime. If you would like to come with us, again, go to the website twholyland.com. twholyland.com. It's in March, March 16th through the 24th. If you want a free brochure sent to your home, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Bette Midler, the star of stage and screen, is facing universal condemnation after she engaged in a xenophobic attack on First Lady Melania Trump. Midler accused Mrs. Trump of being an illegal alien who has trouble speaking English. In reality, the First Lady is a naturalized citizen, and she speaks six languages fluently. The truth is, Mrs. Trump has been a punching bag for Hollywood and the mainstream media from day one. Michelle Obama was revered as a saint, plastered on magazine covers. The talking heads on cable television worshipped every word she uttered. But Mrs. Trump has been shunned. They've criticized everything from her wardrobe to her Christmas decorations. I initially thought their hatred stemmed from the fact she was married to Donald Trump, but I suspect the real issue is Democrats have a problem with a strong, beautiful, intelligent woman who wants to make America great. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download my podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. Tim, Ray, Fred, and Walker, we thank you for listening to AFR. If you'd like to join us on the internet, go to Facebook or YouTube. You can watch the live video stream of the show there. Just type in Today's Issues at Facebook or YouTube. We also post the stories that we are discussing there so you can read them for yourself. Just to wrap up my point from the last, we were talking about the divide in our country over police and African-American community, particularly African-American males. If the default position, if the immediate position that the liberal activist and a lot of media pundits and others are going to take, that the police are wrong if they shoot a black man, And the facts of why that happened are irrelevant. In other words, I can prejudge an incident that might happen today somewhere in America because if a cop shoots a black male, that is police brutality, that is racist, that represents... You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that is the position of the Black Lives Matter and these celebrities and so forth, as evidenced by what happened here in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The 28-year-old, is that what he
29,
was?
29, I think.
29-year-old. What was his name? Blake?
Jacob Blake.
When you don't even wait for an investigation at all into what happened, right? You don't even wait at all. You're LeBron James, and you say, this is horrible, and you're the NBA, and you're boycotting a day later. Then your mind is made up in the way that I just described a minute ago.
Right.
So I don't know how you rationally discuss these kinds of issues with people who take that approach. And furthermore, with as far as police goes, and I know I'm saying something that's not practical, but it's if I were my police officers, I would just almost refuse to go to an incident where someone calls in and the suspect is a black male. Because trouble is, your life could be over. It's going to be over for this cop, no matter if he did the right thing or not.
Right.
Go ahead, Walker.
Yeah, the Wisconsin Department of Justice, the state Justice Department in Wisconsin, released yesterday that the suspect, the criminal here, had a knife in his possession.
He had a criminal record. You're not saying him a criminal now?
He had a warrant out for his arrest.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was assaulting officers, which
and he had a long rap sheet.
So when you do all those things, he's a criminal, and the he got a knife in his possession. A knife was in the same floorboard he was reaching it down to. There was a knife discovered at the scene. And so I don't know if he has a deadly weapon in his possession, and the officers have tried to tase him and handcuff him and tell him to calm down.
They did tase him.
Yeah, they did. They tried to tase him, and that didn't work. There's no other option except for to tell the officers to either get stabbed or leave the scene, which is not what they're trained to do.
I would say leave the scene, given the options.
Yeah, but they weren't even called to the scene.
They were called to the scene by a black woman.
By the girlfriend. Right.
Because they said he was getting what? Violent?
But see, I was telling my wife this last night.
Do you know what happened now? He was called to the scene.
His girlfriend called 911 on him, Jacob Blake, because she said he was trespassing on her at her apartment, and something about he was trying to get her keys or something. They were having a domestic dispute. And the girlfriend, a black female, called the officers to the scene to get Jacob Blake to leave her property. They show up, and they try to talk him down, try to get him to leave, and he won't. And so they try to arrest him because he has a warrant out for his arrest since early July. And when they go to handcuff him, he starts wrestling with the officers. And that two officers are trying to wrestle him and subdue him and handcuff him. So then they pull out the tasers. The tasers don't work. So then he goes into his car with a knife, and that's when he is shot by the police officers. So the only...
Couldn't they have shot him once in the leg?
I'm not even going to talk about that. When you're an officer...
I'm asking a ridiculous question, but this is what you hear. This is the kind of thing you hear. They go, why couldn't you tackle him? This is what they say. These police officers should take the approach... It's Monday morning quarterbacking on something
easy
that happens...
Easy for us on the sidelines, anybody, right, to offer second guessing. But that officer had to make a life and death decision in a split second with a fellow who's out of control, that they've already tried to subdue, that they've already tased, that he's reaching under the seat down to the floorboard, right? You don't know what he's got down there. Turns out it's a knife. But what if he's got a gun? What if he starts shooting? You have to make a decision at that point. And I think it's going to be found eventually that what the officer did was what any reasonable person would have done.
And what he's trained to do. Right. I was told they were trained to unload their magazine.
Yeah, I'm sure it varies per department. But you're supposed to subdue the suspect.
Right.
So whether that means one shot or a taser or handcuffs,
go for the mask.
Whatever you can do to subdue the subject is what they're trained to do, for the most part.
But why aren't these people saying? I know the answer to my own question before I ask it, but I would say, Fred, I ask you this, and then Jan's on. We want to go to Jan in just a minute. We want to finish this. So why don't these people like LeBron James and the others who are going after the police here on what Walker just described is clearly a to me, the police handled it appropriately, and this guy's fighting the cops. Why don't they say, it's unfortunate what happened, but this only reinforces that you should not resist and fight the police when they come to you, when they're questioning you or dealing with you. So please, all of us, especially young black males, do not fight the police.
Yeah,
it doesn't end well. Why don't Ray or Fred? Let's go to you first, Fred. Why don't you say that message?
Well, because the goal is not truth.
Okay.
The goal is not truth.
What is the goal then?
The goal is a narrative that we have to get rid of police forces, defund, or as Joe Biden says, reallocate, which is the same thing. We have to get rid of our police forces because that's part of a Marxist agenda that is out there. We go back to the organization Black Lives Matter. They are run by Marxists. This is part of a political revolution that they are trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
So you take truth away in order to accomplish your real goal, which is fundamentally changing America to a left-wing socialist nation.
It's a lose-lose, and here's why. If the officers show up and get in an altercation, then they're automatically to blame. If the officers don't show up, then they're to blame because the black female girlfriend gets beat up and stabbed by the boyfriend.
And she called 911.
She called 911. The racist cops didn't show up because she's black.
So it's a lose-lose.
There's no winning situation, to Fred's point.
Yeah. Ray?
Look, if there ever was a justified police reaction, this was it. I mean, Walker, you painted it. Fred, you painted the whole scene. The facts really aren't in dispute, right? They are not. We know who this guy is. We know what he was doing. We know why
girlfriend was on video.
Right. We got the video. And then there are no facts that in dispute here. We know why he did what he did. And you just said it, Tim, so well. He did what he was trained to do. That ought to be the end of the story. But we are living in bizarre times, so it's not the end.
What they're going to say, here's the narrative here. That the left-wing media and the Black Lives Matter group, yeah, but they shot him 7 times in the back. There you go. That's end of story. Whatever the cops did or didn't do up to that point, you shoot a guy 7 times in the back, then that's immoral. That should not ever happen, and therefore the cops to blame for the guy being paralyzed. Mm-hmm. He should have defused this. I'm just telling you what these folks say.
Yeah.
And this is why the NBA boycotts games and so forth. That's what they're going to say. I don't know. Again, I don't know how. I don't think there's any resolution to this, and I don't know where it ends up, because except that, practically speaking, I think that police are going to say, if it involves a black male, I'm not going, or I'm going to take the long way there. Or you say to yourself, I understand as a police officer, as a law enforcement officer, that if I respond to an incident involving a black male, that there's not much I can do. I'll try to talk to him, but if not, I'm not getting into a fight
right
with the guy because I know how that goes.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way to avoid these altercations.
So, and I think a lot of these folks know this, and that's why they're being belligerent to the cops,
mm-hmm.
the suspects I'm talking about.
Right.
They know the cops are, you know, have 2 strikes against them when they even begin to talk to them.
Right.
And they use that to their advantage. I think that's what happened with this fellow here.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Jan Markell joins us now from the Twin Cities. She's the president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries and the host of Understanding the Times Radio. Heard each weekend here on American Family Radio. Jan, good morning.
Hi, Tim. Could I just build on what you're saying for
yes,
a minute?
Yes, please.
Because we had, I don't know how much national news it's made, but we had riots in Minneapolis again last night. And, mm-hmm. and what your listeners may not, and it's very serious, it's downtown. The previous riots in May were, well, kind of inner city, but not literally downtown. Last night it was downtown with major shops such as Saks Fifth Avenue, those kinds of shops being burned, looted, destroyed. And here's what happened. Here's behind the scenes. what happened behind the scenes was apparently a young man committed suicide, just decided to shoot himself, and the rioting community assumed that a police officer had killed him. No, didn't do it. A young man did it to himself. And nonetheless, now part of our beautiful downtown Minneapolis is destroyed. And I'm telling you, and I do talk to some, particularly a couple of police officers and one retired police officer, and I can tell you their hands are tied. They don't dare do anything, or you're going to end up like some of these police officers who are trying to do their job, and things go wrong, and obviously their lives and careers are ruined. And as a result, the people of Minneapolis particularly are not being protected properly. This is the future of America if we don't get this under control.
Yeah. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Fred, you had a question for Jan.
Yeah, Jan, we've been reporting, of course, what the government in the state of California is doing to churches, the John MacArthur situation. We talked yesterday about another incident in Santa Clara, California, where a church right now is being fined $5,000 a day. They've been holding church services and doing some of the things that the state has ordered churches to do, social distancing, all that sort of thing. But they're being fined $5,000 a day because they sang songs at their church services. I'm just wondering, I mean, somebody compared it, is this China? And
yeah.
I'm wondering from a prophetic viewpoint that you're so versed in, when you have churches under this kind of attack in America, yeah, what it represents to you?
Well, this weekend on radio, I'm talking to two California pastors, not so much about what we're talking about, though what we're talking about here, Fred, is extremely, not only serious, but very, I think, important. And, you know, the Bible indicates that in the last days, two people groups will be targeted, Jews and Christians. Anti-Semitism will increase exponentially, and persecution of Christians will increase. And it's one thing for all of us to sit here and sort of, grieve that Christians in Nigeria are seriously being persecuted and, quite frankly, hunted down and killed. But we've got shades of some terrible stuff, a little bit shades of Nazi Germany when we have government dictating to our pastors and churches what they can and cannot do. And, of course, the epicenter of that is California. I would say it's bad here in Minnesota as well. Again, it's consequences of liberal government, be it national or local. But I'll tell you, and I'm talking to some of these pastors, and they're standing their ground. They're not going to give up an inch. They're just going to keep on preaching the gospel, doing what the church is called to do, which is heal lives. Right now, when lives are broken between COVID and losing jobs and losing employment and everything folks are losing loved ones, the church needs to be there, and these pastors I talk to are going to stick in there no matter what the cost. They're going to pay the fines. They're going to do what they have to do.
Hmm. Well, we've interviewed a couple of pastors there and continue to follow that in California, and the regulations. Well, they're in court all over the state. They're in court.
Yes.
So who are you having on this weekend? Do you know?
I've got two California pastors on this weekend, Brandon Holthouse and Tom Hughes, the Calvary Chapel Stream. We're going to talk about a lot of different things. But again, I think this is a very appropriate topic, and I just encourage your audience, and I've said this before on air, I think even with you gentlemen, is our pastors today need prayer almost more than any other profession, because pastors and, quite frankly, police officers, I mean, they're all, these groups are under fire so seriously, and with our pastors, they're trying to hold the biblical truth and at the same time be thrown in jail for it. And, I mean, if this is a foretaste of things to come, we got difficult days ahead.
Yeah. Thanks, Jan. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Okay. Look forward to Jan's program this weekend here on AFR, a noon Sunday, Central Time, and 1 o'clock on Saturdays, Central Time, on American Family Radio. Understanding the Times is the name of her program. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Should you want to send us a email. It's comments@AFR.net, comments@AFR.net. How long is Jack Brewer's talk? I got to play this. Fred?
Yes.
Did you want to say something before?
Yeah, I just was going to say we want to hear from one of the speakers last night at the RNC convention, former NFL safety Jack Brewer. Just won an incredible speech last night. I'm not going to say any more. I think you should just listen very carefully.
I'm Jack Brewer, a former three-time NFL team captain, college professor, coach, husband, son, and father. I'm also a lifelong Democrat, but I support Donald Trump. Let me be clear. I didn't come here for the popularity or the praise, the likes or the retweets. I'm here as a servant to God, a servant to the people of our nation, and a servant to our president. I grew up in Gravon, Texas, a town that my great-grandfather was the first black man to settle as a sharecropper in 1896. My early high school experience included fighting with skinheads and being a witness in an attempted murder trial after my friend shot a skinhead in self-defense. I remember my dad's bravery when he personally stood up against a KKK rally in my town. In my house, my father taught me to back down from no one. I know what racism looks like. I've seen it firsthand. In America, it has no resemblance to President Trump. And I'm fed up with the way he's portrayed in the media, who refuse to acknowledge what he's actually done for the black community. It's confusing the minds of our innocent children. Before I left to come deliver this message, my energetic 8-year-old son, Jackson, stopped me and said, "Dad, can you please just tell everyone that all lives need to matter and that God loves everyone?" In that moment, I realized that my 8-year-old had figured out what so many adults have seemed to forget. We are not as divided as our politics suggest. At some point, for the sake of our children, the policies must take priority over the personalities. So because you have an issue with President Trump's tone, you're going to allow Biden and Harris to deny our underserved black and brown children school choice? Are we so offended by the president's campaign slogan, "Make America Great Again," that we're going to ignore that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have collectively been responsible for locking up countless black men for nonviolent crimes? Are you going to allow the media to lie to you by falsely claiming that he said there were very fine white supremacists in Charlottesville? He didn't say that. It's a lie. And ignore the so-called Black Lives Matter organization that openly, on their website, calls for the destruction of the nuclear family. My fellow Americans, our families need each other. We need black fathers in the homes with their wives and children. The future of our communities depend on it. I'm blessed to be able to run inner-city youth programs and to also teach in prisons across America. The inmates in my federal prison program literally receive days off their sentence just for attending my class. And that's thanks to President Donald Trump and his First Step Act. President Trump cared about these Americans and their families, even when so many others had left them behind and had written them off. I'm forever grateful for President Trump for that. He endures relentless attacks, and so do many of us, like myself, who support him. But my mama always told me, when the Lord starts blessing, the devil starts messing. This convention marks a time to celebrate our history. Republicans are the party that freed the slaves and the party that put the first black men and women in Congress. It's the party of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, and now Tim Scott and Donald Trump. Our president has made incredible strides to end mass incarceration and give unprecedented opportunities for black in America to rise. America, let this election be a call for all God's people who are called by his name to humble ourselves and pray together and to seek his face and to turn from our wicked ways. Then he will hear us from heaven and he will forgive our sins and he will heal our land. Amen, and God bless America.
That's what I said last night when I watched it. I said, wow. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm saying that about every 30 minutes with these speakers. That just it's just one after another. Brad, did you get to hear that live last night?
I did not. And that first time I've heard that, the whole thing.
Yeah.
I hope the Republicans take a few million dollars and somehow make this go viral on the internet and yeah. put it on enough TV channels so that every single American citizen hears that speech. It's that important. He made the case. What was that? 4 or 5 minutes long
yeah.
tops.
Yeah.
Made the case right there for the Republicans and for President
Said
Trump.
He's a lifelong Democrat.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
That was, is that posted at our Facebook yet? Or are you going to, that was Jack Brewer. This gentleman's name, former NFL player. And just Walker, what'd you think about?
Yeah, I thought it was so encouraging because, you know, we've got a lot of bad things going on the news that we cover here on the show. But, you know, the Republican National Committee has really brought in some very encouraging, uplifting stories of not politicians, but these are people, just average Americans who have flourished in America and experienced great opportunity. And to hear these messages, I think, is important for your voters to really understand where both parties stand.
Hey, Fred, you see, I sent you an article. Rasmussen yesterday had the presidential race nationally as just nip and tuck.
Yeah, and you know, it's very interesting. There's some stories out there this morning. The Democratic Party leadership is starting to get worried. Number one, Joe Biden did not get a bounce out of the convention last week, the DNC convention last week. Number two, President Trump did during the DNC convention. This is stuff unheard of. And they're understanding now, you know, you have Democrats saying, wow, the way the Republicans have put together their convention beats anything that we attempted to do. And these Democrats also, I think there's a couple of editorials that are out there today, are saying that Joe Biden has to come out of his bunker. And he
yeah.
has, and basically, they've got to stop. You know, Joe Biden's reaction to Kenosha was the well-worn sentences now from Democrats. We got to stop police brutality.
Systematic racism.
Systematic yeah. racism.
Systemic, I guess.
This is, the Democrats are starting to understand they are going to lose this election because of what they are saying and what they are doing.
Yeah. Well, one to prove your point there, Fred, Don Lemon was on CNN. Well, he's a host on CNN, but he was on with Cuomo, I think. And is it Andrew Cuomo who's on CNN? And
Chris
then,
Cuomo.
Chris, and then Andrew's the governor, his brother.
Yeah.
Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon was on there, and he was saying that Joe Biden has no choice but to address the violence because it's hurting his poll numbers, is what Don Lemon said.
Yes.
So as long as it's good for polling, then you don't really have to talk about it. But when it starts hurting your poll numbers, then you better address it.
Right. Joe Biden is former Vice President Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. You just somebody asked him yesterday. It was Martha McCallum or somebody asked one of his spokespeople, when is he going to come out and speak for himself?
Yeah.
You're telling me he's against violence right. in the streets, but this is like a written statement.
When is he going to come out of the basement and face the American people? He's going to have to now because this has been a terrific week for the Republicans. Terrific.
Yeah. The bottom line is, although the presidential race is close and Biden would show in most polls to be up, it's only slight now. It's a very, you know, certainly single digits, you know, five and below in many of these swing states. That's if you believe the polls. I know a lot of you don't believe the polls, but even if you don't believe the polls are showing that President Trump is closing the gap quickly. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.